Hi, let's join Fred Kuhn now for another in-depth interview.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. We've got a great podcast for you today. EQ for organizational vitality. What's at the heart of this strategy? And our guest today is Josh Freeman. Josh is one of the world's preeminent authorities on practical application of emotional intelligence. Josh is also the author of an international bestseller, At the Heart of Leadership, and five other books on putting EQ into action. He's a certified master coach, CEO of 6 Seconds, world's largest organization dedicated to advancing the practice of emotional intelligence. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, we got an exciting subject today. You have books out on it. I've got books out on it, on the subject of EQ and its importance to organizations and their hiring practices. So a lot of people have heard the term emotional intelligence and maybe read that that's important for leadership, but what's it really mean? And how does something so touchy-feely translate to the real world of delivering high performance in a corporate setting?
Well, it's funny. I remember years ago being on an airplane and somebody was, you know, asking me what I did, and I told him, he's like, emotional, what? And I just, you know, it's such sort of an oxymoron in the old days. And now what happens is we understand current neuroscience, we see more and more that emotions are what drives our attention, emotions are what drives our decision-making, they're what motivates us, they're how we evaluate, they're how we engage with others. And really, you know, it's just, it's part of our basic operating system. And so the emotions are there, and you can ignore them and pretend they're not and say, oh, I'm just being rational. But of course, that's irrational, because the reality is that's not how our brains work.
Right.
Or you can be smarter with feelings. And emotional intelligence just means being smarter with feelings.
Don't we run like automatons a lot of times and just run right over the feelings that are really driving everything around us?
I would guess that 95% of the day we're on autopilot.
Yeah.
And we're not really paying attention to this moment, and we're following our patterns, because our brains are pattern-following machines, and our brains are starved for energy, and our brains really like it when we can be efficient, and in order to be efficient, we just ignore almost everything and follow the old patterns.
Well,
that works some of the time.
Yeah, it's easier that way, too. Yeah.
But not if we're trying to deal with change or adapt or, you know, deal with differences. Then we got to get off autopilot.
So I always tell people, if you're hiring somebody, you can hire the most brilliant guy in the world. And some companies like hiring people that have no people skills. All they do is drive, drive, drive. It's sort of like you make dust or eat dust, or good enough never is. But I always say, you know, go back to your first grade. When you're on the playground, did John play well with others? Did you like John because he played well with others or because he was a bully? I mean, it's the same kind of thing, isn't it? Do you play well with others? And then that translates into all sorts of behavioral competence.
Well, I think a lot of management is still running a playbook from 1950.
Yeah.
And thinking, you know, we just like we follow our individual patterns, we follow cultural patterns as well. And if you think that value is created by an individual, and you can just look at an individual's, you know, numbers and say, okay, I know what their results are, and their effect on others and their toxicity and their ethics and the way that they, you know, actually create community, is, you know, if that's totally unimportant to you, then sure, just, you know, go with the old playbook. But if you recognize that increasingly value is created by groups of people working together across boundaries, through difference, doing something new, then you're going to need to hire people who have the capacity to actually work in that space. And that space is not defined by somebody who is just driving. And where I live near Silicon Valley, you know, the old paradigm, we're going to hire a rock star coder and they're going to create tremendous value. And what I see with a lot of organizations that I work with around here is that they're increasingly saying, you know, a jerk who's a rock star is no longer valuable to us.
Right. A jerk's still a jerk. Nobody
well,
likes to get around.
You know, what you permit, you promote.
Yes.
And if you are permitting somebody to run all over people, you're saying, yeah, in our organization, interpersonal skills don't matter, culture doesn't matter, respect doesn't matter. If you're comfortable with that, if you're comfortable standing in front of your investors and your customers and your employee and, you know, the people in your community and saying, yeah, I don't care about people, then permit that. But otherwise, it's time to get serious about this and say we have to take seriously the notion that the way we interact is central to how we create value. And if we don't take that seriously, we're undermining our own value creation as well as our values.
Well, let me explore this in a little more depth. You've published a lot of case studies over the years with companies from Siemens to FedEx to HSBC to Qatar Airways. You've been doing this for 20 years. What did you learn out of those case studies?
Well, one of the interesting themes in this research and what we see in organizations actually using emotional intelligence is that the value of EQ is not in a hire or in a workshop or in a coach. The value comes from embedding this methodology and these tools into your strategy and saying, how are we going to stand out? How are we going to attract and retain top talent? How are we going to build relationships with our customers and our investors and our stakeholders? What is the capacity we need to build in order to fulfill our strategy and vision? And emotional intelligence in the organizations that are really getting value from it becomes the differentiator as much as their other systems and tools for value creation.
In these companies, Josh, what did you identify, not identifying any specific company, but what would you say the major barrier to understanding the EQ as it applies to the workplace? What did you encounter? What was the main barrier, or did it vary by company, and why?
Well, I'll just talk about FedEx for a second. One of the things that's been fascinating about working with them is they were founded on a principle called PSP. They sometimes call it the Purple Promise: people, service, profit. And Fred Smith, when he started the company, said the way we're going to make money is we're going to take care of our people, we're going to deliver great service, and that's going to lead to profit. Unfortunately, very few of the companies that I've interacted with believe that. And what they think is we make money through our intellectual property or our patents or our, you know, unique market positioning, and they don't understand that organizations are made of people and that customers are people, and that the human interface ultimately is where value is created or lost. So what happens in FedEx is when we start talking about emotional intelligence and, hey, what does it mean to lead? They immediately, not always, but usually immediately get, we're talking about the core of our business. And in so many other companies, there's a lot of work required to get to the point where they realize, oh, actually, emotion, something that seems so soft but is central to how humans operate, that's actually a serious part of our work. Once they get to that point and they see that this is not fluffy or something to talk about just at home, then we start to create value.
If you could define value, because I'm working on a piece now called value proposition. And of course, it deals with functional, technical, and behavioral competencies. Mm-hmm. How would you define value relative to behavior?
So I'm less interested in behavior and I'm more interested in what drives behavior.
Okay.
So in a lot of companies, you know, we talk about behavioral indicators or the leadership behaviors or the sales behaviors or whatever that we want. What I'm interested in is what drives some people to do those leadership behaviors in a way that works. And I think authenticity is critical. But essentially what I'm talking about is getting to the heart of it instead of the behavior of it. So I think what creates value in behavior is stepping back from the behavior itself and looking at what's really going to work with this situation and this person, and how can I engage authentically instead of transactionally? How do I build a relationship that's going to help us move forward in a way that's beneficial for all of the stakeholders? And I think that's really what leadership is, right? Leadership is about engaging people towards a better future. and it's not a better future for, you know, one stakeholder. It's not a better future for me. It's a shared better future. And so that requires a level of hearing and seeing people and seeing the equal dignity and goodness of all people and our shared future and the fact that we are interdependent. And then, and this is why it's so damn hard, because there's a lot of different needs and there's a lot of different wants and there's a lot of different experiences. And we need more intelligence, emotional intelligence in particular, to be able to tune in and figure out where is that better future that's shared.
There's so many layers to this. For example, one of my guests about a month ago and I were talking about multi-generational drivers under the same roof. And you overlay the behaviors of those generational differences and try to, it just gets more and more complex as you look at it. So it's a mystery and it is a great, probably the greatest challenge for corporations today.
So my answer is that there's a huge amount of difference, but there's an even huger amount of common ground. And we have to learn to step into that common ground and learn to speak the universal human language. So I personally have worked on every inhabited continent. I've worked with people in, you know, of every skin color that there is, every religion that there is. And my organization works with people in 175 countries of all ages. And yet somehow when we can start connecting at an emotional level, none of that matters. So we just published some new research about generational differences and geographic differences, and I'm fascinated by that. And there absolutely is legitimacy to say there are different ways that different cultures are engaging with emotions and with value creation and with relationships and people of different generations and different genders and, you know, other factors. And I think it's useful for us to learn about that. And I think it's essential for us to move past that by going to the foundational level of what makes us all tick.
You know, just a personal note, I play music. Mm-hmm. And as I've gone all over the world, the uniform friendship establisher, whether mm-hmm. language was there or not, was the music.
Yeah.
And it's that empathetic understanding that, yeah, I like that guy's really, yeah. So whether I'm listening to somebody, you know, in Australia or France or Germany or the British Isles, wherever it happens to be, you know, it's that exchange of empathy and feelings. That's all part of behavior. And it leads toward a good outcome, whether the language is common or not. There's a common understanding.
Yeah. I was talking to a professor in the middle of the U.S. in a business school. And he's from Eastern Europe, and he was telling me that his colleagues, one of them is from China and one of them is from South America. And he said, here we are, we're all business school professors working in the middle of the U.S. This isn't cross-cultural, this is crisscross cultural. You know, and I think that's the reality, and it's the reality that's going to continue to grow. We have to find a way for this complexity to become our ally for moving in the direction we want to go instead of being the barrier. Because we're not going to go back in time. We're not going to go back to a more isolated world. We're going to need to find a way to work with each other.
That is correct. Well, I can't thank you enough, Josh, for joining me today. Folks, we've been delighted to have our guest, Josh Freeman, who runs the 6 Seconds organization. You can read Josh's bio on the website and contact him through the information that's there. Don't forget to look him up on LinkedIn. And Josh, I hope we get a chance to do another podcast together. It's been absolutely delightful.
I would love to do that. Thank you, Fred.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. If you wish to speak with Fred or you want a transcript of this interview, send an email to podcast@stuartcoopercoon.com. See you soon.